The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily and sometimes more than daily politics podcast. Today, the news pages filled with a story relating to Dominic Cummings, Boris Johnson's senior advisor. A story broken by The Guardian and The Mirror has found that Cummings travelled 260 miles to be near relatives, so his family had childcare support nearby as they self-isolated with coronavirus. This has led, in some quarters, calls for Cummings to consider his position, to resign, with this idea that he's breaching government guidance. However, I am now joined by two Spectator writers with rather different views on this, Alex Massey, the Spectator's Scotland editor, and Melanie McDonough. Alex, you write on Coffee House that ultimately Dominic Cummings needs to go. What's your reasoning for this?
I think I'd start from the position that, you know, one can have considerable sympathy with the predicament in which Dominic Cummings and his family found himself. You know, his wife was ill with the virus, you have a young child. It's perfectly natural and normal, I suppose, to look to family for assistance in such times. But, and there is a but here, there is a significant difference when you are the Prime Minister's, you know, principal advisor. You cannot behave in the way that other people might. You must resist that kind of thing. It beggars belief as well that there was nobody in London that they could call on for help. And you can't have senior people in the government breaking the lockdown restrictions they are imposing on everyone else. And it becomes as simple as that, unfortunately. You know, the lockdown was sold as a great national collective endeavour. And it was accepted by the public on that basis, too. And again, you know, that just further reinforces the point that you cannot have one set of regulations, one set of guidance for the general public, and then a rather different, rather looser set of regulations and guidance for politicians, special advisors and other people at the heart of government. It just isn't on. And the public understand that, I think, you know, and the strength of the lockdown and people's adherence to it is only as strong as that collective acceptance of it. And once you start chipping away at that collective acceptance, then the whole thing begins to collapse. And I think his position is now unsustainable. And I'm mystified by the Cabinet's decision to defend him this afternoon.
Melanie, ultimately, there has been a precedent so far in terms of coronavirus and government advisers. We've had two resignations so far, one in Scotland, Catherine Calderwood, the chief medical officer, who was found to go to her second home. More recently, we had Neil Ferguson, the scientific adviser. It turned out he had a visitor to his residence, someone outside of his household. In both cases, they resigned pretty swiftly, but yet this isn't happening here. So why is this different?
Because the rationale was completely different. Neil Ferguson was seeing his girlfriend and Catherine Calderwood was going to her agreeable second home in Fife for a bit of sea air. Dominic Cummings and his wife were going to their family because they were afraid that both of them would fall victim to the virus, and it turned out to be exactly what happened, and they had to have a backup plan so that the little boy would be looked after. This isn't the kind of hypocrisy. This is a legitimate interpretation of the rules, which would hold good for anybody. Any citizen would have been entitled in those circumstances when they had a little boy and they were fearful that both of them would actually be too ill to look after him, to go and seek out their family, even in Durham, so that somebody would be there for the child if they were incapacitated. And it turned out to be perfectly sensible because it was initially Mary who fell ill, and subsequently it was Dominic who was much iller. And so their fears were in a sense vindicated, but that would have been the case for anybody. If you've got no backup in London, then family is who you turn to. And I don't think it's one rule for Dominic and another rule for the rest of us. I think that anybody could have argued legitimately for the same principle to be applied.
And Alex, if you mentioned the ministers, of whom some have been rushing, others a bit slower to take to social media to defend Dominic Cummings today. But also in the press conference today, we had a more neutral figure in the deputy medical officer, Jenny Harries, talking about special exceptional circumstances where there were potential clauses
to the guidelines as they set out. And some have looked at those comments today and suggested that she was saying that safeguarding a child, as happened in this case, is something which would be allowed under the guidance.
Well, I mean, there was some suggestion of that, but she also seemed to me to suggest that actually this was not the sort of behaviour that the medical authorities, the public health authorities, would really look terribly kindly on. But again, you know, the point is a much more straightforward one than that. So is that, you know, there are any number of people who could claim to be, you know, in exceptional circumstances during this crisis, during this emergency. And yet, you know, millions of people have gone out of their way to obey the guidance, you know, to follow the guidance, to accept the lockdown and the restrictions that come with it. So you have weddings postponed, funerals going unattended, families separated for weeks, months at a time, and with no end in sight for that, you know, in some ways. And, you know, a lot of those people, I think, will be looking at this story and thinking, well, you know, but how come it wasn't, you know, how come Dominic Cummings and so on was able to evade the guidance, if you like, and just do his own thing? You know, what made him so exceptional in ways that I am not exceptional? And I think that a lot of people will view that as a very definite sense of double standards. And I'm not sure that they would be mistaken to take that view.
And Melanie, that's a charge from Labour today. They're calling for an urgent inquiry into this and suggesting that it is ultimately, the actions suggest it's one rule for a certain portion of society, a privileged one, and a different rule for everyone else. So doesn't Alex have a point that in a way this undermines the government's message going forward? Because, you know, it's ultimately suggesting that there are loopholes, things that people didn't realise were the case. People might get more lax.
Well, I think that Alex makes a fair point that everybody's had to put up with enormous privations. I mean, not being able to go to a parent's funeral, just heartbreaking. But had Dominic been going to his parents' home to visit his parents, had he, like Catherine Calderwood, been going up to Durham for a nice bit of country air rather than to be cooped up in London, then the indignation would have been absolutely justified, and I would have been sort of right behind those calling for his resignation. He was going there to safeguard his little boy. The rule is designed for a purpose. It's to safeguard the vulnerable as well as to safeguard the NHS. And if you've got two parents who are incapacitated, you've got no immediate family in London, which I understand is the case there, then family is who you call on in these circumstances in order to look after a child. And a four-year-old child is vulnerable and can't be expected to sort of fend for himself, even though this child does seem to have been preternaturally self-possessed and going around handing rabida to the stricken parents. In those circumstances, it would have been irresponsible not to go to the family farm where they could self-isolate without seeing the parents, without even seeing the sister, who was the fallback option, and self-isolating in a separate building and not actually seeing any of the family. I think that was the responsible thing to do. And in fact, if somebody had said to me that the option is you can either drive to Durham or else hand your child over to social services in Islington, I would have gone out of my way. I mean, I would have travelled anywhere rather than hand over my child to Islington Social Services. And I don't know what your acquaintance are like, but I can't think of many of my friends whom I could hand over a small child to and say, well, would you mind having him for the duration? I don't know how long it's going to be. It could be a fortnight. And the child's views of the matter would be another thing altogether. I think the child's interest comes first, even before the interests of Dominic Cummings, the politician.
Alex, does Melanie have a point there in the sense that it's not as though Dominic Cummings went up to Durham to have a good time? It was ultimately acting. It was whether or not you 100% agree with that it was, you know, he couldn't have called one of his friends in London. It was driven by a place of duty rather than a sense of we're going to have a better time here.
Well, sure. I mean, I think people can accept that. And again, as I say, people can sympathise with the predicament in which he and his family find himself. But that doesn't change both the perception and the reality of this, which is that, you know, he behaved in ways that ran directly contrary to the way that the government is advising everybody else to behave. And it does strike me as being somewhat perplexing that if you have members of your family who have the virus, and if you suspect that you are shortly to likely to have it as well. That, you know, it strikes me as being very strange that you would then willingly drive 250 miles and put yourself in the general vicinity of your elderly parents, who are obviously a vulnerable group themselves. It strikes me as being, if not irresponsible, then certainly potentially reckless.
They have the number 10 line is that it was a younger member of the family, in the sense it was the aunt and the two nieces.
Okay, but the number 10 line is also that, you know, Durham police didn't have a word with them at all, which is something directly contradictory by Durham police. And so I'm not sure how much credence or credibility one should give to the number 10 line on this aspect of things right now, because it seems to me that they are now engaged in what they seem to see to be a political fight for Cummings' survival, and that they have privileged his survival over the clarity of the government's messaging in a whole host of other areas. And it strikes me that that too is a reckless thing to do, perhaps an irresponsible thing to do, and certainly a confusing and perplexing thing to do. But, you know, perhaps there is some grand plan at the heart of it all and so on, but it doesn't seem like that from where I'm sitting.
Well, leave aside the sort of grand plan, we're talking about this in strategic sort of terms, and in terms of popular perception. What's actually at stake is the well-being of a small child. If you don't have immediate family in London, if you don't have a live-in nanny, you can't actually summon in a nanny in these circumstances because of the restrictions on movement. The only viable option, as I say, short of handing your child over to Islington Council, was to go up and stay with one set of parents or the other. And he was nowhere near his parents, by all accounts. They stayed in a separate building. And with the worst will in the world, a virus cannot penetrate from a sort of bunker building in a farm estate into the main house. He was not endangering his parents. He wasn't even endangering the sister, who just left a basket of food at the door. He wasn't putting anybody in harm's way. The only small twinge of unease I felt was to learn that he was travelling 250 miles when he wasn't feeling the best. And presumably he was, you'd kind of worry about him driving with due care and attention. But that's the sole aspect of the whole thing that strikes me as being remotely problematic. You have to put the interests of a child first. In fact, if you don't put the interests of the child first, you're a really weird and horrible parent.
Melanie, just to round up, I mean, there was a YouGov poll out today which suggests that of those surveyed, 52% think not only has Dominic Cummings done something wrong here and broke the rules, they think he should resign. So do you think public opinion...
They're misinformed. As I said at the outset, this isn't a matter of Dominic Cummings somehow bending the rules. The slogan, stay home, save lives, was precisely that. It was a slogan. The actual law allows for nuance in order to protect vulnerable individuals. And as I put it to you, that short of being a very elderly person, there is nobody more vulnerable than a small four-year-old.
And Alex, it's clear that you do not share that view, but I wondered, I mean, you talk about how he can no longer stay in his position, but do you think, I mean, we have heard today from Dominic Cummings, he's been doorstepped, he is clearly not apologising, he has no plans to give his notice, but do you think were he to accept that there is a blurring of rule or be more apologetic in his language, would that be enough for you to suggest, you know, there was a change in stance from the government, he should continue?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably too late for that now. I mean, that would clearly have been the sensible approach to have taken. But, you know, there are plenty of senior Conservatives and so on who are looking at this tonight and so on, saying despite what cabinet ministers have been tweeting this afternoon in terms of, you know, supporting the government's official position, there are plenty of senior Tories who are deeply concerned by this, who think that it is at best a lamentable own goal in terms of the government's credibility. And that is now what is at stake. You know, that there is a genuine risk, it seems to me, that the government becomes something of a laughingstock as a result of this moment. And the government's authority in this emergency is moral, much more than it is legal. And this whole story, it seems to me, risks doing grave damage to that moral credibility, that moral authority. And that actually is the real difficulty, I think, for the government.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Melanie. And thank you for listening.
The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.